You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the program. We have to...
Back to the future or back to the past. That's
we have to play some of that feel-good doo-wop stuff to kind of temper all of the news we cover, the content matter of this program. I guarantee you, Keith Alexander and our featured guest this evening now making monthly appearances on the show, and our audience is excited about that. Mark Weber can remember when... We lived in a better place than we do now. Our comprehensive discussion about the nationwide insurrection, really an insurrection that spans the Western world and its greater ramifications will continue now with Mark Weber, the director of the Institute for Historical Review. Much more than that, Mark is an accomplished historian, a lecturer, a current affairs analyst, which is why we're bringing him on so much. He can really expertly cover just about any topic we throw at him. Really, any topic we've covered so far. He's an author as well, educated in the United States
and Europe. Explain this insanity to us, Mark.
Yeah, well, he can do that. He's got a master's degree in modern European history. He's back tonight to talk about what's going on. And as Mark put it, well, we'll welcome Mark first, and then we'll tell you how he put it. Mark, how are you tonight? Are you staying safe out there?
Yes, we're safe out here in California. The weather's nice. We almost every day is a beautiful day out here. Slowly we're seeing a return to more or less normal conditions. They've lifted the obligatory ban on face masks here in Orange County, but it's still required by most businesses. But yeah, things are returning to normal, and I'm very happy to be on with you and Keith again. Thank you very much for inviting me and arranging this.
Always great to have you, Mark. I tell you what, we need every bit of your brain power to break this stuff down to us. I think the world has gone stark raving mad, but well, I want to know your take on this.
Mark and I were sharing an email exchange a few days ago in anticipation and preparation for tonight's appearance. And he came up with, a provocative line of conversation. We'll start here and see what it evolves into. But, Mark, you said you wanted to explain why the recent violence and looting was more than predictable and what we should expect in the future. Where to begin is the question. There are so many layers to this onion, all of them worthy of airtime. Where do you want to start?
The main point I want to try to stress is that this is predictable and understandable. What's new about these this recent so-called unrest isn't the looting, the violence in black areas. That has happened many times before in American history. It happened a number of times in the 60s. In 1992, there was a huge outburst of violence in Compton and black areas of Los Angeles, directed especially against Korean stores. What's different this time is that the large protest rallies have been joined by thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of white Americans. That's what's new, and that the frustration, the anger, the rage that not just black Americans feel, but millions of white Americans feel, has developed into a large protest movement that has attracted support from even many people, many white Americans who would have not joined such protests 20 or 30 years ago. That's what's new. And it's when I say it's understandable, predictable, it's because what these protest rallies are demanding, what millions of people are demanding, is the fulfillment of promises that white America, and I'm using the word when I, you know, in a, I'll explain explain what I mean by that. What white America and white American politicians have promised for more than 50 years. The madness isn't the protests. The madness was the promises that have been made and not fulfilled. For 50 years, our leaders, including Republican presidents, including those who call themselves conservative, have pledged to try to bring about is a racially equal society, a society without this large disparity between white and black achievement, living standards, and so forth. And that has been, that promise has been in place for more than half a century and has not been fulfilled. It's not about George Floyd, whether he was a bad guy or good guy, or whether he was a criminal or no good. It isn't about the specifics of any one thing. It represents something much deeper, a failure of the American system to live up to its own proclaimed standards. That's what this is all about. And so the protests are an expression of something very significant, very deep-rooted in America, and it represents a contradiction between the claims, the pretenses, the promises of America represented by its educational system, its politicians, its mass media and Hollywood for more than 50 years on the one hand, and the reality that we see around us on the other.
Mark, this is Keith. I have a little bit different take, but basically on the same lines. The reason these protests didn't happen the way that they are now, being multiracial rather than monoracial, back in the past is primarily blacks, now it's blacks and whites, is because 20 to 30 years ago, those people were not in existence. I think most of the white protesters are millennials, and this is why the Brown versus Board of Education decision was so crucial to the left's program of change. At least that's what we've always said, because that gave them access to our children that they had never had before. And these children are being brainwashed, not only in public schools, but in private schools. All the teachers, the teachers' colleges have the same Marxist viewpoint, have the same students, and they go out to either one of them. And these children now, these white millennials, basically have been brainwashed, I think.
The Brown versus Board of Education ruling by the Supreme Court wasn't made by Marxists, and it wasn't made by black leaders. It was made by white men. It's white men who handed down the decision demanding immediate force, if necessary, desegregation in the United States.
Well, not quite, Mark. Let me just say this. It was masterminded by the one Jewish member of the Supreme Court at the time, Felix Frankfurter, and his Jewish Mephistopheles on the side, Stanley Ellman, Philip Ellman.
Okay, but the Supreme Court Chief Justice was Earl Warren. He was appointed by Dwight Eisenhower. He'd been the former governor of California. And more than that, he represented a point of view that was already well-entrenched in America's media, mass media, and already well-entrenched in America's educational establishment, and already in place, already entrenched during the Second World War. This isn't some outside thing. This is something that white Americans have...
if you distinguish white Americans from Jewish Americans, I would say it was the Jewish infiltration into our society and into the corridors of power that brought it all on.
Hold on right there. Hold on. The break is coming. I am at IHR.org right now. I would encourage you to go there in the break as well.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Kosher. Certified. Put the two words together to get Kosher-tified, which is spelled with an S-E-H instead of just S-H. It's the right way to spell this, the German way, and it made it easier to trademark. Now, did I tell you that the letters S-C-H still make the shh sound, as in all those American food producers saying, shh, let's keep it really quiet that our product is kosher certified. Think about it. Nearly one century of kosher certification, and hardly anyone outside exclusive observers knows that most packaged food and kitchen products are literally certified by religious intermediaries. Well, because you, consumer, are indirectly paying for this. The Kosher-tified app is here to make kosher certification awareness an inclusive matter for people of all faiths and identities. And it even boasts a unique database of products not kosher certified. We call that NKC. Start meaning it. It's fun. NKC, not kosher certified. Now, to confuse our audience even more, we put a question mark at the end of our name, and that really cinched our trademark approval. It relates to the website where you can begin your new shopping behavior, thekosherquestion.com.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Well, we're back with Mark Weber, the director of the Institute for Historical Review, IHR.org. It's a website that, if you're tuned in tonight, while you're not driving your car, go to it. If you're listening online at home, IHR.org. Support the work of Mark Weber. He has been there and been doing the work even longer than we. Now 16 years long in the truth here at TPC. Mark Weber has been doing it longer. Very effective. One of our favorite guests and one of the favorite guests of the audience, even more importantly. I agree with really both of you in the last exchange. Mark's right that this has been a slow process, ingrained upon our people. Whites have willingly participated in their own demise. But Mark, I mean, in Brown versus Board, that's something that we...
It's a trademark subject of inquiry.
We do every year on the anniversary of that ominous decision.
By 1954, when the second, basically the second hearing, Fred Vinson had been the Chief Justice, a white Southerner. He died of a heart attack, and Felix Frankfurter told Philip Ellman in mock horror, "I'm shocked, shocked." And then he said, "You know, Justice Vinson's death is the first real evidence I've ever had of the existence of God." And then he got Warren in because Warren had made a corrupt bargain with Dwight Eisenhower in return for the 45 electoral votes of California, which put Eisenhower over the top in the Republican nomination. The cost of that was to appoint Earl Warren to the first vacancy on the Supreme Court, and it just happened to be the vacancy of the Chief Justice.
I don't want to get mired down in this because we're talking about current events, but it is important and it is worth remembering, and it's as our mutual friend Sam Dixon always says, for any whites who are deluded about how they will be remembered, the blacks will not be erecting statues to Earl Warren. And certainly they have not.
They'll probably tear it down along with Winston Churchill.
Well, anyway. Mark, let's get back to you. I mean, it's been a long time since 1954, but could you have anticipated what we've seen now?
Yes. I mean, the tearing down of Confederate statues and now the demand that Columbus statues come down. I remember I was in my either late teens or early 20s when I predicted or expected that the day will come when a serious effort will be made to rename Washington, D.C. because it's named after a man who was, by today's standards, very definitely a white supremacist, and who regarded the people who now make up the majority of the population of Washington, D.C., as, well, fit for slavery. Now, I'm not defending slavery by any means, but the fact is that the men who founded America, the United States of America, was founded by people who certainly by today's standards would be considered white supremacists. The United States of America wouldn't have been established if the principle that everyone now says they agree with, including Donald Trump and conservatives, was in place. They wouldn't have been able to take the land from the people who already lived there, the Indians. The fundamental problem was already at the very beginning. Remember, the founding fathers would have been appalled at even the embrace now of what we call democracy. At the Constitutional Convention, the speaker after speaker warned about the dangers of democracy. Democracy is a theory of government based on the idea that numbers are more important than quality, that 10 lazy, stupid, devious individuals should have more to say about the future of the country than 5 courageous, intelligent, productive men, because they're larger in numbers. That's the whole premise of democracy. The founding fathers didn't believe that numbers should be the determining thing. They wanted to set up a system and tried to set up a system that would prevent numbers from being more important than character and quality.
Mark, let me say this too. This is Keith. The American Revolution, based on those outmoded ideas that quality is better than quantity, that has succeeded to this point. The ones that were based on that more purely democratic ideal that numbers rule, that would be the French Revolution and the Bolshevik Revolution. They're both in the ash heap of history. And quite frankly, I think we're moving to a point where you can question whether the American Revolution and its fruits are going into the ash.
Well, you know, but again, we have to remember the context of it all. And the context wasn't that Jefferson and the founding fathers believed that all men and all people were equal to one another. Of course, equality doesn't exist in the natural world. What he was talking about was a sibling rivalry, that he was equal to the King of England, that the American founding fathers were equal to the royalty.
Well,
That's what that was about.
And I've said this, though, James. Those words are they're loaded with dynamite. They should never have been.
But I still defend the founders. I don't think in the 1700s they could have ever foreseen the likes of the insurrection and the mass insanity and illness that we have now. But Mark, the volley back to you.
Well, no, I agree. They did not foresee this. There's a fascinating correspondence that went on for years between John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, and they went back and forth about these questions. Where is it going? What does this mean? And Adams pressed Jefferson, well, what do you mean by equality? What do you mean by democracy? And they went back and forth discussing this, and both of them were very aware of the explosive nature of the racial question, the race issue. And each of them thought that this was a can that they're going to kick down the road, to use the modern term, that it had to be dealt with, but none of them felt or had the ability to really deal with it. Jefferson said it's like riding a tiger. He didn't like slavery, but he didn't know what to do or didn't know how to get the support to do something consequential about the issue of race if slavery was done away with. And they
well, you know, Jefferson, at the Jefferson Memorial, they have there's no thing more certainly written in the Book of Fate than that these people, blacks, shall be free. But then they totally ignore the rest of that sentence, which is that there is also nothing more certainly written in the Book of Fate than that the two races cannot coexist under one government.
Well, we're certainly right about that, as we've seen
That's what Lincoln believed. But we've been told, and American politicians who call themselves even Republican or conservative, along with those who call themselves liberal and Democrat, have embraced a view of the racial question, of the race issue that we see now manifest, and which millions of people are saying, when are we going to have that put into effect? When are we going to see this equality that you've been talking about? Now, I think the whole notion of equality in the sense that protesters are demanding it is delusional. It's not realistic. But they've been told, even by Republican presidents, that this is what we should be achieving, what we should be aiming for, and we're not seeing it in reality.
Well, that'd be like me complaining that there are no 5'4" centers in the NBA.
well, the whole premise is crazy. For example, I was just listening. ABC News will put out the fact that, yeah, blacks are arrested on a far more, are more likely to be arrested than whites. That's true. And they say, well, they imply or suggest that that's, in fact, they say that's an expression of the great injustice of America, that this is a very bad thing. Well, okay, I'm waiting for gender equality. White men, whether black or white, are much more likely to be arrested than women. The jails are far more full of men than women. When are we going to receive this gender equality?
Because cultural Marxism said that Marx and Engels got it wrong by thinking that economic class was the primary fault line in human society. It's not economic class, it's not even religion, it's race. And that's why we're seeing race brought to the fore and every scab picked off the wound of every racial grievance there is. That's Cultural Marxism 101.
Mark Weber, our featured guest from tonight, not only one of our favorites, one of our audience's favorites. Check him out at the Institute for Historical Review, IHR.org. Support his work. We'll be right back with him.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
The mayor of Boston has declared racism a public health emergency, opening the door to making changes in police policy in the city.
There are other steps that we have to take in housing, in education, in economic development.
Also, police reform is coming to New York. Governor Andrew Cuomo signed sweeping legislation into law.
The community pays for the police department that they want. So what police department do you want?
Some states are seeing a spike in coronavirus cases. The CDC put out new guidelines. The nation's top infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, says preventative measures work.
You can improve on the economy. You can get people back to work and still do the fundamental things like wearing a mask all the time when you're outside, of having this physical distance, of avoiding the congregation and crowds.
This is USA Radio News.
You know, it's true. Difficult times have a way of focusing us. We have to think about what matters most when it comes to our spending, our health care. No doubt, this is why so many people are joining MediShare right now. MediShare is a trusted way to save up to 50% on your monthly health care costs. More than 400,000 people have already made the switch. It's pretty obvious why, too, especially now during this challenging season with health care costs and out-of-pocket expenses going up. MediShare can save you a lot of money. The typical family saves $500 a month. And MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry that's worked beautifully for 27 years. There are different options to choose from to fit your budget. I'll give you the number here in a second. And if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Maybe now is the perfect time to make the switch and start saving. Here you go. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
President Trump has chosen to delay his rally in Oklahoma by 1 day. He says he wants to respect a holiday called Juneteenth, which is important to black Americans. More people are banning the Confederate flag after the riots in Minneapolis over the death of George Floyd. With more on this story, here's USA's John Hunt.
Amazon is reportedly removing the immensely popular 70s series The Dukes of Hazzard from its streaming library as it reviews its content offerings in the wake of racial tension. The TV series ran on CBS for 7 seasons, and it follows the adventures of Beau and Lou Duke, who create mischief in their fictional small town of Hazzard County, Georgia. The show has been criticized over the years, especially for the boys' well-known car, the General Lee, which has a Confederate flag on the roof. The move would be in line with a recent decision made by HBO Max, which removed the Oscar-winning Civil War film Gone with the Wind from its library.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Oh, yeah.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, an hour with Mark Weber, my good friend. And it always goes by too quickly, and tonight's hour is racing by as well. And I have been saving a story we normally would have led with in any given broadcast of TPC, but we have been saving this particular story for Mark because he is a West Coast guy by birth, a native Oregonian, now living in sunny Southern California. But there is an article, well, this has certainly been all over the news, but I'm reading now from an article in Wall Street Journal, entitled The Seattle Secessionists. After police fall back, protesters declare a new autonomous zone. I'm just going to read a couple of paragraphs. We're going to toss it over to Mark, and we'll bring Keith back in the conversation in just a moment. This is from, though, the Wall Street Journal. And it reads, "The founding of any new nation is worthy of note, and so it is with the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, a.k.a. CHAZ. Several blocks of Seattle have been seized by protesters." They call them protesters and simply protesters. "Now it's up to the citizens of CHAZ, adopting Federalist Number 1, to decide the important question whether anarchies of men are capable or not of establishing good government. This week, the Seattle police withdrew from their East Precinct in the Capitol Hill neighborhood of downtown Seattle after threats that it would be torched otherwise. The cops removed barricades and began decreasing its footprint as the protesters had," again calling them protesters, "had requested. A cardboard sign at the border of CHAZ warns, 'You are now leaving the USA.' Seattle residents report they have been subjected to barricades set up by the protesters. CHAZites have also set up their own police force," which is, Mark, I'm just going to depart now from the article. You get the gist. I mean, basically, you have a six square block section of downtown Seattle, which has been completely taken over by Black Lives Matter, a Black Lives Matter Antifa co-op, and they are declaring their independence, and the media, not only the media, but the governor of the state of Washington, the mayoress of the city of Seattle, they're all fawning over this. I guess some insurrections, you know, my ancestors tried this in the 1860s. They were met with a far different response. Mark, let's go it to you on the West Coast. What do you make of this situation in Seattle?
Well, right. I mean, sure, there's a double standard. It's comparable to the movement in Barcelona during the Spanish Civil War, which had a very strong Marxist and also anarchist contingent or factor in Barcelona. And the anarchists essentially took control of Barcelona during the Spanish Civil War. It's something like, a bit like the Paris Commune of 1871, in which radical egalitarians took control for a while of Paris.
And communards.
But the bigger point is, yeah, certainly it's tolerated. It's tolerated because violence, double standards, and so forth are all considered good if the motives are considered worthy. If the motive is anti-fascist or egalitarian, then that's justified. But that's been in place for a long time in the United States, that principle. Remember, America is has already had just a tremendous schizophrenia about the law. For years, different cities and states have declared themselves so-called sanctuary zones that aren't going to enforce or cooperate with federal officials on immigration law because they say, well, that's not the right thing. They're in favor of it's part of this egalitarian universalist view.
That's the nullification doctrine of John C. Calhoun. Of course, when the South tried to do that back in the antebellum period and in the civil rights movement, that was dismissed as a bunch of idiocy. But now they're taking it very seriously. Again, as Orwell said, all in Animal Farm, all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others.
Well, this is Mark's point, and it's a great point. I like the way you put it, Mark, the schizophrenia of our interpretation of the law. I mean, this would have, and can you imagine had it been a group of, you know, white male conservatives for whatever reason doing this? I mean, they would have been mowed down.
It was supposed to be that Harriet Tubman was to replace Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill by now. That's been delayed. It'll probably still happen at some point in the future. Harriet Tubman was breaking the law at the time. She was smuggling, helping to smuggle slaves from the South into the North. But that's considered a good. In other words, people like Harriet Tubman or Martin Luther King have been honored as great exemplary Americans for 40, 50 years in our school textbooks, in our by our educators, by Hollywood, and so forth. That process has been in place for a long time. But I want to make a bigger point. We're seeing, though, a tremendous, well, not only schizophrenia, but American-style government and democracy, or whatever you call it, the American system of government, is failing by its own standards. Whether you're a liberal or a conservative, Republican or Democrat, things are not working well. There's obviously huge discord and contradiction in American society. And whether you are Republican or Democrat, this is not good. And it's going to be very difficult, increasingly hard, for America to be any kind of leader in the world or factor in the world because people will naturally say, well, get your own house in order. American society is not a model for anybody. Either it's from a liberal point of view, it's failed to live up to its promises of equality, or from a conservative point of view, it's failed even to maintain basic order and stability in its society. Whatever standard you want to choose, American society is in a real crisis. And this will continue because the contradiction, which is already has been in place for a long time, is now becoming more acute, especially under the Trump administration. Trump has proven himself in this whole crisis amazingly ineffectual, amazingly unable to do anything very significant. And, I mean, it's just coming to the what's more manifest are just the weaknesses of his character and his administration that were already in place when he took office, but they're more and more obvious now. I mean, it's very hard now for Donald Trump to make us to keep us his slogan of his campaign, the slogan "Keep America Great Again." By no standards, even his own, is America great right now. But see, that's a confusing thing because his own followers and Donald Trump himself thought America was basically a good country, or it was a potentially great country. It just needed the right leadership, namely his leadership, and everything would go back to being great again. Well, no, there's something fundamentally wrong in American society. It might be a rich society or prosperous sometimes, but it's not a healthy society. It's an internally discordant and divided and confused society. And a society like
and that's by design. Let me just say this at this point. Two things. First of all, our external enemies must be licking their chops at the discord and the incoherence of America at the present moment in history. And the second thing is, Donald Trump is an old American. His extemporaneous instincts are in common with ours, but he's got the same problem we all do. He is trumped, no pun intended, by Jewish power and influence within his own household. Jared Kushner and Ivanka basically get him back on the politically correct train after several days after he makes a comment. And this is the problem. This discord that we're seeing and this weakening of the fabric of American politics is by design. It's not an accident. This is what Jewish power and influence has been working for basically since the early 1920s, and it's bearing fruit at the present time.
Well, Keith, as you know, I have been as outspoken as anyone, I think, in the United States in identifying the role, the impact of the organized Jewish community in our society. But this power, it plays the role it does in our society because Americans have permitted it to. They've welcomed it. They haven't tried to oppose it. Only a very small number have. And the people who white Americans vote for have been beholden to this power. This power is not has not taken place secretly. It's been very overt, very obvious about its role and influence. Several years ago, Joe Biden even gave a speech to a Jewish organization, which he said, no group in America has played a bigger role in shaping our cultural life and determining our social policies than the organized Jewish community, than the Jewish leaders in our society. It wasn't a secret. It was reported at the time. And Donald Trump, if he's, it shows then that he is very, very different than the president he presented himself to be. He's not a strong president. If he's able to be as influenced as Tucker Carlson and other people say he is by Jared Kushner, it shows he's not a very thoughtful or strong-willed person then, despite what he claims about strength all the time.
Or it shows that he's totally aware of the insidious strength of Jewish power and influence in American life today.
Well, in any event, what's happening now is happening now. And what is happening now has been unprecedented, at least in my lifetime. I'll turn 40 years old next week. Let's hang on. And I am so happy to have Mark
Weber. Mark and I saw it coming, though.
That's right. A little more prescient, maybe. Would that be the polite word to use? But we'll be back with Mark Weber right after this. IHR.org.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Welcome back to Get On the Show. Call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
I got to do two very quick hits, and then we're going to toss it back to Mark. But I want to make mention of this while Mark is on the air, because when I was promoting his appearance tonight, just a few minutes before we went on the air, I linked, of course, to Mark's Twitter account at History in Review. That is the official Twitter account for the Institute for Historical Review. Of course, Mark Weber serves as the director for that fine organization. But while I was linking over to it, it became known to me that just a couple of weeks ago, our very good friend Hutton Gibson passed away at the age of 101.
Wow.
Hutton Gibson was Mel Gibson's father, of course. He made some appearances on this program. We became friends. He actually called this radio program his home away from home. Mark, did you know much about Hutton Gibson? Because, again, I picked this up from a retweet that your organization had done from a movie maker who was doing a documentary on the life of Hutton Gibson. Were you very well at all familiar with Hutton Gibson?
I met him in person only once. I talked to him a few times on the telephone. We exchanged a few letters. We had dinner about 10 years ago in Los Angeles. I drove up and he drove down from where he was at the time. There was quite a few people at the dinner, including his wife at the time. And so the conversation was awkward because the wife wanted more or less a social occasion. Some other people wanted to talk about different things. And Hutton Gibson talked a lot about the Catholic Church. And so the conversation sort of went all over the place, and I guess to the dissatisfaction of just about everybody, because it wasn't really the kind of dinner or the kind of conversation that any one person really wanted out of the event. He was a very principled man. He had, of course, many children. Was very successful. He moved to Australia, of course. Remarkable man. And David Cole is working on a movie about him based on a great deal of interview footage that he did years ago with Hutton Gibson, actually before I met him and had much contact with him, and when he was younger and more alert. He died at the age of 102, not of the coronavirus, by the way. It's a remarkable life, and most people, of course, want to know about his relationship or his influence on his world famous son. Other people, many of the people who are most interested in his views, I mean Hutton Gibson's views, are really very strong traditionalist Catholics, which is what he was. Anyway, on the one occasion when we were in person, it went all over and nothing was really said really in depth. But, I thought it was well known that he had died a few weeks ago because it was reported with some glee in a lot of the New York and Eastern press.
Well, I'm sure it was reported on. It was still news to me until today, and I learned about it from you. So thank you for that. I'm sorry and saddened to hear of his passing. He had appeared on this show numerous times. His appearances on this program had actually been picked up by Entertainment Tonight and several of the Hollywood tabloids, and he always defended his appearances on this program. Which, again, he called his home away from home. I had, as you, Mark, some conversations with him on the telephone. He was a stand-up guy all the way, and some of the things we talked about will remain in confidence.
A stalwart culture warrior.
But he was very knowledgeable, and I hate to hear it. I mean, 101, 102, you can't beat that, but a fantastic gentleman. And, man, I tell you, I joke about it sometimes. I've got a lot of names and numbers in my phone. And quite a significant percentage of them have now gone on to receive their eternal reward. And Hutton Gibson now joins that list. And, salute to you, Hutton Gibson.
I want to pick up on a point you're making. He's the kind of character that there used to be many more men like that in America at one time. When the Star-Spangled Banner talks about the land of the free and the home of the brave, Hutton Gibson was a brave man. He didn't care if he made enemies or people didn't like what he had to say. The Americans were much more like that 50 and 80 and 100 years ago. Now it's very sad the extent, but particularly on our political leaders, who are not leaders at all, they're followers. We've just seen the most egregious, astonishing example of that in the last few weeks when Nancy Pelosi and governors and mayors are all bowing down, even literally bowing down to the mob, and that's a fundamental problem of our whole system, is that it produces people in power who are not leaders at all, but really panderers and followers.
It's like Stockholm syndrome almost.
Well, Mark, I will actually share with the audience that I will, at the top of the next hour, I'm going to do a little more remembrance of Hutton Gibson, who, again, was a friend of mine. He actually sent in a whole box of his books when the I've got it on the bookshelf there. What is it? The Enemy. Keith, go get that book on the bookshelf here in the studio. It's on the far right corner. And we actually have an autographed copy of it here in by Hutton Gibson. There it is. It's the white book. Go about four books back. There it is. And what's the name of that book?
The Enemy is Still Here.
The Enemy is Still Here, signed by Hutton Gibson. I'm holding it in my hand. I had a lot of good conversations with Hutton on the phone. He was a fantastic guy. We will remember him further in the next segment. But first, in the third hour, but first let's go to Tom. Tom has called in for Mark Weber. Tom, do you have a question or a comment for our featured guest tonight?
Well, just wanted to say, and possibly Mark could follow up on this, or you and Keith, I think this is an important question. A lot of times we talk about the Sons of the Confederate Veterans, you know. Well, there's the United Daughters of the Confederacy, which was a woman's organization for women who were Confederate partisans. And it's an old organization, just like the SCV. Now, during this riot in Richmond, their headquarters and museum was sacked, and a bunch of historical documents and, from what I've read, Stonewall Jackson's battle flag was destroyed.
That's right. That's right.
Man, I would like to see someone, you know, someone, a feature, newspaper feature, guy, talk to the ladies and just see what was stolen or what was wrecked, and it's just a sad situation. It really is.
Well, Tom, I'll tell you what we'll do. Thank you for calling in tonight. Thank you for the comment, and I'll tell you, we'll reach out to the UDC and see if they'll appear on this show. The SCV has not shown as much courage. I mean, some members certainly, but not on an organizational level. I'll toss that back to Mark. Mark, this is interesting. So, yeah, I mean, the UDC headquarters in Richmond, Virginia, was sacked, was burned. Priceless relics and artifacts.
Let me make this point, too. Let me just say this.
Very quickly.
That women are at the forefront of the left in these Antifa Black Lives Matter protests, but not in the contrary, for example, fighting it or on the behalf of white advocacy.
Nor would men expect that to be the case, but or would I want that to be the case? Men should lead, women should support. But Mark, I mean, to the let's just go back. We only have two or three minutes remaining. IHR.org, folks, remember the website. Support the work of Mark Weber. We've got to have support going to the truth tellers. Mark's been doing it longer than us, and not many can say that. But Mark, Donald Trump has tweeted some amazing things in recent days about law and order and stopping the insurrection and putting into place the Insurrection Act. But you have the situation up in Seattle. The UDC is another example. I mean, buildings being arsoned, set ablaze. In Seattle, you literally have people declaring an independent republic or whatever you would call that up there. Why has Trump not sent in the military?
Yeah, there's a joke going around. Trump tweets great things. All we have to do now is elect him president, and he'll do something. Well, he is president, and he's not ensuring law and order. I mean, Trump's own idea of law and order is selective as well. I don't want to get too high horse about it, but he has his violation of international law is just well known around the world. There's no justification in either U.S. law or international law for the troops in Syria. I'm more angry, actually, at the death and destruction of thousands of American lives, tens of hundreds of billions of dollars, maybe trillions of dollars in destruction through the terrible wars that leaders, both Democrat and Republican, have imposed in our society, have made happen in our society over the last 30 years or so. Donald Trump talks now about law and order, but when the law is one that he doesn't care about, or he'll find some excuse to break it. I mean, that's one of the features now of American society. Everybody cites law and order when it's in a cause or in a situation that they think is important, but that law and order doesn't seem to apply when it's something for a reason or a cause or whatever that is against their own interest or against something that they want done.
Well, Mark, this is Keith. In those wars in the Middle East, It's not Jews and it's not blacks that are the primary casualties for the American side. It's white Gentiles, like the people who are being subjected to vilification in the current spate of demonstrations and whatnot. And there's something awfully strange about that to me.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that's strange is the contraction of time. Anytime Mark Weber appears on this show, an hour has already come and gone. Mark, we could have gone 3 hours with you tonight and only begun to scratch the surface. I have never seen a guest get Keith as animated as you do, and our audience as well. Mark Weber, IHR.org. Support his work. Mark, we hope to have you again in July. We've had you every month this year, my good friend. We'll be right back.